The night may be long and the dark may be deep, but the answers are there to be found. Whether it's the normal, the abnormal, or the paranormal, you're in the right place. Let's go beyond reality.
Welcome to you all here. As we dig out from 22, 24, some places 27 inches of snow in the upstate New York, Cooperstown area. Yeah, I didn't think we got that much. I thought it was something like a foot. You know, I was looking out my window and thinking, okay, that looks like a foot or so. Until I went outside. And when I went outside, the snow was actually basically up to my hips. Maybe a little less than that, but thighs for sure. And so there was a good 2 feet of snow here in upstate New York. And, you know, it's pretty for Christmas, that's for sure. If it sticks around, I mean, I think we're looking at something like, you know, 45, 50 degree weather in the next week or so. So I don't know if it'll stay around until Christmas, but imagine some of it will. But, you know, once it starts to melt, it gets kind of messy. And once it starts to melt, it, you know, just makes mud and dirt and everything looks kind of gross at that point. So we'll see. Maybe it'll be a white Christmas. Maybe it'll be a muddy Christmas. Who knows? But it'll be Christmas. And despite everything that's going on, I hope everyone gets an opportunity to enjoy the holiday season. It's obviously very, very different. It's very different this year. In fact, doesn't really even feel like it's Christmas or the holiday season at all. Which is a shame, because it's the lead up to Christmas that makes it so special. And there really hasn't been that kind of lead up this year. Next year, we're going to have to double down on all that stuff. We'll have to watch A Christmas Story and It's a Wonderful Life and Christmas Vacation, all these great Christmas and holiday movies. We'll have to watch them 3 or 4 times each just to make up for the fact that we didn't have the lead up this year. So, we've got a great show for you tonight. We're going to talk about some paranormal case files. Rob Guttrow will be with us. He is an author, medium, and a paranormal investigator. He's been on the show a couple times, and we're going to be talking about some of the case files of Inspired Ghost Tracking. It's a group, and how he befriended a spirit after continually getting messages over the course of 15 years. And he wrote a book called Kindred Spirits about this particular experience. So we're going to have a great time talking to Rob about his experiences in the paranormal community. And again, we've had him on the show. He's written books about the spirits of pets and stuff related to animals, which we've enjoyed quite a bit. So looking forward to having him on again. All right, so I got to ask. My left palm here has been itching me all day. Now, I remember my mother used to say, itchy palm means you're going to find money or something. Is that something that a saying that other people have heard? And has anybody ever been able to verify its validity? Because I really hope that's what it means. It's either that or I've touched something that's irritating my skin. I don't know which of the two. But speaking of A Christmas Carol, as I see a bunch of folks mentioning it in the chat room, one of my favorites, and I haven't watched it in many years, is the Mr. Magoo Christmas Carol. Does anyone else like the Mr. Magoo Christmas Carol? I think is I don't know. I haven't seen it in years. I don't like it. I probably wouldn't be the same for me now. Maybe that's why my palm itches, Gene. Maybe it was for you. Now, there's no poison oak in upstate New York this time of year. Anyway, so we're kind of getting off topic here. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Please do that. Go to YouTube, search for JV Johnson when you find it. Please subscribe to the channel. Become one of our YouTube family members. Also, the Twitch channel, great place to enjoy our weekend programming especially. We do stream the program there during the week as well, but we don't stream our weekend stuff on our YouTube channel. We do that on Twitch. Because it's a little different than the weekday stuff. So please go to Twitch, look for JV Johnson, subscribe to that channel, follow it as well. Please share all of this with your social media friends and whomever you think might be interested in the topics that we discuss here. And we do discuss a lot of them. In fact, I was just communicating with an author who wrote, and actually a reporter, I think, is the better description of her profession. But she wrote an article about dogs seeing ghosts. And I think we're going to have her on the program to talk about it. I think that'll be an interesting one, too. I know a lot of people. Yeah, Thanks. Our guest is in the chat room, says his Italian mom used to say itchy palms mean money is coming to you. That's what my Italian mom said, too. My mother being born in Italy, definitely an Italian mom. And that's what she used to tell me. And I've been itching my palm all day. Getting worse as showtime approached. So I'm expecting, cash to fall from the sky. I don't know how this works, but mom can't be wrong. There's no way. Anyway, so we're going to have, I can't remember the author's name right now, but we've been communicating. Eddie's been talking to her about being on to talk about this phenomenon. I know that anecdotally people talk about the fact that their pets seem to notice things that we don't notice, and we all know that's true. But do they notice the spirit world? Do they see ghosts? Why is your dog looking up into the corner of the room as though they see something? And you don't see anything. What's happening there? So that'll be an interesting topic when we... Thanks, Rob. Rob's going to mail me a dollar. That'll be an interesting topic when we get a chance to have her on the program. So we have a lot to talk about with our guest, Rob Guttrow, tonight. Looking forward to this conversation. Again, we'll be talking about some of his case files. He's written a book called Kindred Spirits, and this is going to be a great conversation. So looking forward to doing this. Let me see here. I didn't update our bumper music here, but so this should work. Okay, we'll be right back. It's Beyond Reality. Don't go away. Please support the program. Go to patreon.com/Johaw. That's J-O-H-A-W. Rob Guttrow's been here with us a couple of times before, and Rob considers himself to be an average guy who just happens to be able to communicate with people who have passed. He's a medium on the Inspired Ghost Tracking Team of Hanover, Maryland. And by trade, he's a meteorologist, so he tries to explain ghosts and spirits by using science. He's had the ability since he was a teenager, and it's gotten more acute over time. And his first experience as a teenager was when his grandfather appeared to him. Rob, welcome back to the program. It's such an honor to have you back. I love having you here, and this is a great time of year to do it as we head towards Christmas.
Thank you, JV. It's great to be back. This is a perfect time to talk about spirits as we're getting the spirit of the holidays.
It really is. But before we do any of that, I got to go back to this Italian mother thing because, I didn't know that you had an Italian mother like I had an Italian mother. And is this one of those things? I mean, as you probably know, when you grow up in that environment, you know, you hear things, you say things, and you think the whole world hears the same things. And then you realize, no, that's just an Italian mom kind of thing. There's a lot of stuff like that I found over the course of my adulthood anyway, that I just assumed everybody heard these sayings, did these things, but it's really an Italian mom thing.
That's true. Yeah, I've had the same assumptions too, and I found out that it's only limited to Italian families.
But it's a special. If you haven't grown up in an Italian family, you don't know maybe what we're talking about specifically here. But it certainly is a special environment to grow up in. A lot of loud people, a lot of food, a lot of bickering, but it's all done in love.
This is true. Yeah, and my mom used to spend 2 weeks baking before Christmas time.
Yeah,
I could never do that, though.
Yeah, no, my mother, she passed a couple of years ago, and she lived for cooking for everyone for all the time, but specifically around the holidays. Thanksgiving and Christmas were her times of year where she shined and loved to have friends, family. Everyone was always welcome around the table, and boy, we miss that. Things change when we lose those folks in our lives, for sure. And that's an understatement, of course, but someone like you, Rob, who has the ability to communicate with those on the other side, you might have a different angle on all of that. How do you see the passing of loved ones like that?
I really just look at it as someone moving to another state, another state in the U.S., because they're still communicating with me. And for some reason, my mother is really strong on the other side.
Really?
She was actually pretty loud, in life. My husband seems to channel her a lot and say things she used to say without even knowing.
Your husband channels your mom?
Yeah, they always say you marry your mother, right?
Uh-huh. That's funny. Did your husband know your mom?
He knew her for about 8 years before
okay,
she got.
Okay, so he knew her a little bit. So, okay, and so she must have approved then, or she wouldn't be channeling through him.
She did, yeah. She hated my brother's wives, mm-hmm. but she said my best in-law is my son-in-law.
Oh, wow. Well, that's neat. So, but for someone who doesn't, and I'll put myself into this particular category, someone who doesn't recognize maybe the communications that are coming from particularly loved ones on the other mm-hmm. side, what should I be looking for? What should I be opening my mind, my eyes, my ears to maybe catch some of those communications?
Well, that's a good question. There's actually quite a lot of things. And usually they're relative to things that your mom would say or do, or names associated with her. Coins are a really popular way that spirit communicates. And I know you mentioned my book, Kindred Spirits, about that spirit I befriended.
Mm-hmm.
He loved tossing coins. And you always have to look at the year, because the year is indicative of the spirit that's trying to give you a message.
Okay, so explain that to me. So if I see a penny or something and it has, I don't know, my mother was born in 1945. You don't see too many 1945 pennies, but would there be some other significance? Maybe my birth year, or maybe the year she passed away, something like that?
Sure, either of those years would be significant. To give you a clue. And the other thing, too, is that if you find a coin, and it depends on who you're thinking about,
mm-hmm.
that's also indicative. Because sometimes it takes a lot of energy anyway to transport these coins, to apport them, if you will. But so sometimes they can't get the year close enough. They can only use what coin is close enough to you physically.
You know, it seems to be a lot easier if you just say, "Hey, Jimmy, wake up," because, you know, that's what she used to call me, and then I'd have no illusions as to what I was being told.
Well, you know, you may hear that. You may hear that from another room, or you may dream that.
Well, yeah.
And that's her coming through.
Yeah.
Sure.
You know, I've got to give you a bit of a story here, and I don't remember the exact details, but my father died before my mom by a couple of years. They both died way too young.
Mm-hmm.
But shortly after my father had passed away, my sister, who was far more eager to get some kind of communication from my dad at the time and now my mom, and not that I'm not eager, but I cherish them in my own way. They're in my heart, and I know they're there, and, you know, I'm okay not waking up and seeing my mom stand next to the bed. My sister's looking for something more than that. And she called me one morning and she said, "You have to turn on, I don't know what channel it was, some channel." She said, "I was having a dream, and in the dream it said, turn on channel 14, whatever it is." And she said, mm-hmm. she went downstairs, turned channel 14 on, and it was some musical artist playing a song that my father loved.
Hmm.
And she said, "That's definitely Dad talking to me." And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not, I mean, who am I to say it was or wasn't, but I was impressed by that.
Sure. Yeah. So spirits, one of the easiest ways spirits can come to you is in your dreams, because our logical mind is asleep. And the logical mind is the thing that explains things the way it tries to explain things, and deny signs, if you will. So spirits can wake us from a dream and direct us to do something that will let us know that they are there. So, yeah, that's absolutely believable.
Well, she was very, very comforted by that. It was kind of an important point for her to start to reconcile the grief and the loss. So, you know, and again, like I said, I was impressed by it, but I didn't judge whether it was or wasn't, but I just felt great that it made her feel so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my parents have both come through with musical messages for me.
Is that seems to be a story we hear rather often. You know, someone will say, "Yeah, I got in the car and I turned on the radio, and, you know, whatever the song that I danced to my father with at my wedding was playing, and I had just been thinking about him, and clearly that's a communication." We hear those types of stories quite a bit, I would say.
Yes, we absolutely do. And, I find that whenever I turn on the computer, and if I'm thinking of my parents, or if I'm thinking of somebody, a song will come on an old song would come on that's never played anymore, that would indicate that they're with me.
So, you know, you talk about this with such confidence and depth of knowledge. When did all this start coming to you? When were you able to sort this out with such certainty?
Oh, gosh, it took decades. I'm not going to tell you my age, but I'm quite old.
It doesn't happen overnight, does it?
No. So you mentioned 13 is when I saw my grandfather. That was the first sign for me.
Right.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, for decades, I just ignored the ability that I had. And things would come to me every now and then. And in 2005 is really when I kind of hit the paranormal wall, because I had a puppy to task. His name was Buzz. And we talked about Buzz before in a previous show.
Yeah.
Buzz awakened all of my abilities. And it was amazing how many things that he showed me that pets can use to communicate with us from the other side, just as humans do.
So did Buzz awaken those abilities after Buzz passed?
He did, yeah. Right immediately after he passed, he showed me all kinds of different ways that he was communicating with me.
Did you, when that first started happening to you, now you'd had some experiences prior to that, but you said you kind of, you know, you kind of, I don't know, whether you explained them away or just didn't accept it fully. When Buzz started to come through in more rapid and maybe frequent sense, did you start questioning yourself? Did you think, what's going on here? Am I losing my mind? What's happening?
What I did is I wrote everything down.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to keep a journal all the time. And I look back on that and I would discuss it with my mother. My mother actually had the same abilities, but she was afraid of them. She wouldn't use them. But she would ask me every day what dead person I talked to.
Was your mom, my mom, and if this is too personal, you don't bother to answer, but my mom was Catholic, Italian Catholic. Was your mom an Italian Catholic?
Oh, yes. She was, an Italian Catholic.
Did that have something to do with her fear of those abilities?
No, actually, I think that her fear actually stemmed from when, after her mother died, her mother spoke to her very loudly in her right ear. She said she remembered hearing her mother call her name in her right ear. And she ran down the hall and she said she ripped the T-shirt off my father. She was so scared.
Really?
Yeah. And so she was petrified of hearing from anybody from the other side. And as a result, if you're scared when you get a visit, spirits will not come back to let you know they're around, because they don't want to scare you.
Yeah, I have to ask you about that, because, you know, again, I have this type of conversation on this program often. And, you know, one of the things that I'm torn about is that idea that maybe one day I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll open my eyes and my mother will be standing at the end of the bed or next to, or both my mother and father, whomever, will be standing there. And that kind of frightens me. Not that it's them, but just this idea of an apparition like that being at the end. But I shouldn't be afraid of that. I should be welcoming of that. And for some reason, I'm torn about it.
Yeah, well, it would startle me, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just think that in the physical world, we're certainly not expecting anybody to be standing over our beds in the middle of the night. I have enough problems seeing them when I'm awake. I think you're perfectly reasonable to not want that to happen.
That's good to hear, because I felt a little guilty about that. I just don't know how I would react. And I think it is that startle factor that's the initial reaction. It's kind of a primeval reaction that you would have. That fight or flight thing kicks in until you can make sense of it, and then you start to think about it a little bit differently. When you were a child and your grandfather first appeared to you, how long had he been passed?
He had been dead about 7 months. So, I figured out as an adult, why exactly he showed up in the middle of July. And that's because he was born in July. His birthday was in July. And spirits tend to show up around birthdays, anniversaries, and holidays, just as they do when they're alive.
Right.
So, you know, as a 13-year-old, I had no idea. I just ran out of the house.
Yeah, yeah. And so you obviously, and you were young enough at that point that, you know, you had probably hadn't even made sense of his death yet.
Yeah, I did not. His was actually the first wake I had ever gone to, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was quite traumatic.
Those are traumatic times in childhood, and I remember my first one. It was actually my great-grandmother, and the images are still, you know, burned into my head, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but they're there, and that affects children of that age, and it kind of sets the stage for what they start thinking about death from that point on.
It does. I will tell you, though, as an adult, as my abilities have kind of increased and enhanced, going to wakes has two different, ways of looking at things. When my mother passed in 2013, she was waked, and I went up to the casket to do the Catholic thing and kneel, and my mother clearly and very loudly in my mind, in my head, said to me, "Could you do me a favor and darken my eyebrows, because they didn't do a good job?" And I laughed out loud for a minute, and my husband was behind me. He goes, "She's not talking to you, is she?" I said, "Yeah, she wants me to darken her eyebrows, and I am not reaching in there to do that."
Yeah, I think the rest of the group would have said, "What is he doing?"
Yeah, she was very meticulous about her appearance. Mm-hmm. And she, my younger brother used to joke that she would wear heels to go take her trash out.
Mm-hmm. And I understand perfectly. My mother was exactly the same way. And if, you know, I could hear my mother saying something very similar to me if I had gotten any kind of message at the time. I could hear it being something like that for certain. I want to talk about your training and your education as a meteorologist.
Sure.
You know, it's a form of science. You're obviously very science minded. Do you ever have conflicts between the science part of your mind and this other part of your mind that, you know, a lot of the science community won't even accept this stuff as real?
Sure. Yeah, there's a conflict between them, but I really try and explain everything in the ways of energy and the way that energy behaves. So that really has helped clear a lot of the obstacles for me on how things happen. So I get through it that way.
When you started to develop these sensitivities after you lost your pet, you talk about the ability to be able to sketch out ghosts and get names and more detailed information. How does it come to you? How do you, is it like a voice in your head, or is it more feeling oriented?
Well, it's kind of both, and I also get a picture in my head. So as I've been developing these medium abilities, I get a lot of different feelings from either an earthbound ghost or a spirit. Now, I call a spirit the one that has crossed over into the light. I make that distinction because they're the same, but they're different because one is stuck on Earth in a fixed location of its choosing. That's a ghost, and the spirit has crossed over and can come anywhere, anytime, anywhere around the world and follow you, even on vacation, in your car, whatever. So they will convey a lot of things to me. They'll convey emotion. They'll actually show me a picture of what they look like. And that's been really helpful when I go on paranormal investigations, because I actually sketch them out. And there are quite a few of them in the Case Files of Inspired Ghost Tracking book that folks can see. And what's really cool about that is that we would always show the picture to the homeowner. And so far I've been batting 1,000. The homeowner has said that's exactly what the ghost looks like that I've seen in my house.
Wow. That picture that you see, does it take on a form like of the person when they passed, or is it a younger version? Is there any rhyme or reason to how that appears to you, or could it be anything?
It's usually just before the person passed. Mm-hmm. Like there was a ghost that we encountered that was born in that died, I think, 1878, and his name was Lally, and he died from an accident where I think a metal or wood had fallen off a cart, like a horse-drawn cart, and struck him in the head. And he showed me what he looked like before, you know, just before the accident. He was a young guy too. I think he was 29. So I sketched him in my book, and he wore a certain kind of hat and so forth. There was another guy who was a steel worker. He was kind of a bigger man. He was a balding. And he showed me what he looked like, you know, before he died. So it's not, I don't see anything gruesome like on their deathbed, but sure. They show me what they look like when they're alive, when they were alive. Just like spirits, too. I mean, when spirits come to visit, They usually project themselves as younger looking in their favorite time of life. Like I always see my dad when he looked 35 years old, mm-hmm. Even though I don't remember what he looked like when he was 35 years old.
Some people think that, I don't know how to make this sound intelligent, but some people seem to think that when you see a manifestation of a spirit, it's actually you, in your mind, you're putting on them the physical appearance that you remember or you want to remember or you want to see. They're there in a more nebulous form, but it's a projection from your own memories that are determining how you're actually seeing them. Any thoughts on that idea?
I think it could be a little bit of both. I think it depends on the situation. You know, like I said, I don't remember my dad at 35 years old, mm-hmm. only from a picture, mm-hmm. only from photographs. But that's the way he's always shown up to me in dreams. And that's the way he tells me that he was most comfortable in life.
Let's talk about your first book, because you wrote your first book as a result of your puppy coming through to you after passing and really mm-hmm. helping you recognize how important these abilities were and how you could use them to not only help yourself, but help other people.
Yeah, that was really my motivation to try and explain that what happens after this life, that energy transforms. It just doesn't dissipate. It becomes another, it moves into either spirit or stays as an earthbound ghost. It also to give people hope and understanding as well, because there's more after the physical life. There really is. And, you know, although, you know, no one knows all of the answers. When I get on the other side, I'll come back and I'll give you the rest of the
yes,
answers.
Yes, please do. just so we can have some definitive answers. I mean, you know, most of the folks that listen to the program, and I certainly have heard enough of this, even anecdotally, you can't deny there's something to this because it's just so many firsthand experiences and encounters that, you know, you cannot help but conclude that something's going on. It's just really defining exactly what it is that's going on is the stickler. That's where we can't get that final piece of information to finish this puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll just have to wait to get the rest of the answers.
But let's talk about pets for a second, because obviously that was an important part in your realization of what you needed to do moving forward with your life. But a lot of people lose pets. I mean, it's obviously more common. Pets don't live as long, so you might lose 3 or 4 or 5 during the course of your life. So you're mourning 3 or 4 or 5 times for the loss of a part of your family. What do you say to people who aren't convinced or maybe don't understand that, yeah, pets are part of the afterlife too? They have whatever that essence is within a living being that makes that transition.
Sure. Well, that's actually one of the questions that I get that actually makes me the most crazy when people say to me, you know, animals don't have souls. And that's absolutely ludicrous, because what is a soul? So I often define a soul as the energy within us coupled with memories, personality, and knowledge. And every living thing has that energy, that soul. And we all cross over into the energies of the cosmos or heaven or whatever you want to call the other side. So again, there's the energy part, and then there is what a soul is. So everything has a soul.
Didn't you have some experiences while you were traveling that were kind of important in this story?
I did. So I had experiences with not only my own pets, that followed me on vacation, but also my mother and father following me on vacation. And I ran into a whole bunch of ghosts in England when I was on vacation. But I will tell everybody that no matter where you go, spirits of your loved ones who cross, whether they're pet or person, they will always find you. 2 years ago, I went on vacation took a cruise down the Rhine River in Europe.
Yeah, in Germany.
Yeah, it was really amazing. We went from
beautiful
Budapest all the way to Passau, Germany. Mm-hmm. And I told my husband, I said, my mother and father are here with me. I can sense them. They're enjoying the trip. And he said, okay, well, when is she going to give us a sign? Well, we got off the cruise. We got on a bus. We went to Passau, Germany. On the way in Germany, there was a huge sign, and it turns out it was a supermarket. The sign said Norma. That was my mother's name.
Oh, wow.
And then I looked at my husband, I said, in the words of that comedian, here's your sign.
Wow. When you were in Europe and you were encountering ghosts, I remember talking to you about this last time you were on, and there was, I'm trying to remember exactly what your position was on this, but I think you were saying that, you know what, I'm on vacation. I just need some time to myself. You didn't want those messages coming through as often as they were at that time. Can you turn it off?
Well, for the most part, I can turn it off. But when you're surrounded by a number of dead people who are vying for attention, mm-hmm, to get some help, I always tell people it's like being in the supermarket and somebody, like two people behind you, keeps calling your name, and finally you have to turn around and say, what in the world do you want? Who are you?
Yeah.
That was vacation.
Yeah. So more about Europe, though, with the spirits that were trying to contact, were these people that you knew, or was this just, hey, you're in the middle of a place that has a far older history than the United States does, therefore there's just more activity there?
Yeah, it's the latter. It was just people, dead people from all centuries were contacting me. We went in an old tavern, I think it was the old thatch tavern in Stratford-upon-Avon, and I thought it was a waitress, a server, who was carrying a basket of bread, and I said to my husband, I said, can you ask her for some bread? And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, that woman right there, and I described her, and he said, look back again, and she was gone.
No.
she was dead. She wasn't there.
That ever send, ever, those experiences ever send a little shiver down your spine? I mean, you just did that to me. Even though it's not meant to be scary or anything, you know, you still get that little tingle.
Yeah, it does. You know, sometimes I have to stop and really focus to realize who's there and who's really not there.
Tell us the story about kindred spirits. Tell us about this relationship that you had with a friend who passed, and how that became so important that you decided you needed to write about that too.
Okay, sure. This is an amazing story, because this is about the spirit of a man that I never met in life. He died in 1996, and the only reason why he connected with me is because he was my husband's late partner. It turns out there was a lot of things that I have in common with this guy. Mm-hmm. We were born 2 days apart. And there are a number of things. But he came through really early when we were together. And the first time I saw him was driving down the street with my husband. And I looked in the mirror, and I saw his face. And that freaked me out.
Sure.
But he comes back all the time. And as I mentioned in the beginning of the program, he's the one that sends me coins all the time. And whenever I'm thinking of him, the coin is always dated 1996. It's always the year he passed. And I have to tell you, JP, I have never seen so many coins dated 1996 in my entire life.
Wow.
he finds them.
Wow.
After our dogs passed, I wanted confirmation that they were with him. And, of course, we were walking our other dogs, and we found a penny, and it was dated 1996, right after I asked him.
Did he know your dogs?
No. No, again, I never knew him. He died in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And my now husband and I, we didn't meet until 2005.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So, no, I had absolutely no physical knowledge of him whatsoever. And what's interesting about this too is he rescued us in England by sending a lookalike, someone who looked exactly how Ed is his name, would have looked had Ed lived to be in his 50s. We were lost and our GPS went dead in England, and this we were stuck and we just stopped. We were in a wooded area. The sun was setting, and we couldn't get out. We didn't know where we were going. And this Royal Mail truck came up behind us, and I flagged him down. And the guy that got out, I explained to him what you know, we need help going back to the highway. And I was just standing there, kind of in shock. And I got back to the car, and I said, "Did you see that guy?" And he said, "He looks exactly like Ed would have looked had Ed lived to be in his 50s.
Well, it's a good thing Ed did that, because I've seen the way that movie ends, and it doesn't end well when you're lost in a foreign country and you don't know how to get back to the highway. I've seen that movie a lot of times. It's never good.
Yeah, you were teenagers.
do you mind telling me your husband's first name?
Oh, Tom. Sorry.
So did when Ed came to you, started to come to you in the beginning, when you first started to recognize who it was and were getting communication from Ed, was it because Ed wanted to make sure that you were taking care of Tom, or was there a jealousy? Do you know what the motivation was at the time?
As a matter of fact, we actually went to a psychic and a tarot reader and two of them, and they separated us into different rooms, and they each did a reading, and they both said the same thing without knowing who we were. They didn't know if we were friends. They certainly didn't suspect that we were dating each other. And they said, there's a guy connected to the other guy in the room who has died. And he wants to make sure that you two are together because you should be your soulmates.
Oh, wow.
And so Tom came out. I came out of the separate readings, and we came together and we compared notes, and they both said the same exact thing. And it was just freaky. And he still has never gotten over it. But what's actually funny about this whole thing is that over 15 years, Ed has shared things with me that, like behaviors that Tom had or things that they did together that Tom has never told me. And I would tell Tom, and he would say, "Will you stop talking to Ed, please?" I don't like that.
Yeah, it's got to be uncomfortable for Tom every once in a while, I would think. This was such an important part of your life as this was happening, and this, I think you said 15 years of communication with Ed, that you wrote a book about this.
I did. and the book Kindred Spirits is really, it's not only about him and his story about how I befriended him. I mean, I really got to know him so very well. It's it it's really about all the different ways that he has communicated. And these ways are indicative of how spirits of your loved ones will communicate. So there's a lot of lessons in here for anybody who has lost a loved one.
I'm just kind of going through the list of books. What do you have, six, seven? How many books have you written?
I have seven. I'm actually doing edits on my eighth book, which is Pets in the Afterlife 3, which is coming out next month.
The Pets in the Afterlife 1, 2, and 3, basically. The first one is the one you wrote after the experience with losing your pet, right?
Yes.
And what do the subsequent Pets in the Afterlife books discuss?
So the first one really has a lot of science in it. It has, and it has chapters by three mediums who have had experiences with their dogs and spirit. The science that it addresses is all the levels that dogs learn on, dogs and cats, and also an amazing neurological study using an MRI to scan dogs' brains to prove that they have the same emotional response in their brains of love, showing love, that humans have. And Dr. Gregory Burns in Emory University is the one that did that study. And I think his book is How Dogs Love Us. So there is science proving that they have the same exact emotions as humans. So that's in the first one. The second one is filled with half with messages that I've gotten from dogs and cats and spirit, horses and birds too. And the other half of the book is filled with stories from other people who had experiences on their own and share them with me.
This idea that dogs in particular, and having had several dogs, I know exactly what you're talking about, even if I don't know the science behind it. But this idea that they actually love and they actually develop a human-like relationship with their families is quite marked. And this is not only something that you've written about as it comes to dogs that have passed on, but you are actually involved in rescue, aren't you? Don't you have a dachshund or involved in dachshund and Weimaraner rescue?
I am, and I've been doing that for about 10 years. So we've been doing fosters and transports and home visits, and we've adopted. We've had foster failures, if you will. And I have to tell you that as I was finishing Pets in the Afterlife 3 this fall, we lost two of our teenagers.
Oh.
One of our dachshunds who was 16, and our Weimaraner who was 1 month shy of 16. So this has been a really devastating year.
I'm sorry to hear that, but I can't help but smile when I even see the word dachshund, because they are, you know, these mostly small dogs, but have the biggest personalities. They're really, really a unique breed.
They are. They're very personable, and they're very stubborn. but they can be fun. And I will tell you that our both Dolly and Franklin, who are the Weimaraner and the dachshund who passed, have given so many messages since they passed in May and October that they have big chapters in the next book.
Oh, wow.
And actually, this past Sunday, we were outside with our two dogs, our two remaining dogs, and I heard Franklin the dachshund bark from our sun porch.
Mm.
And it came from within the house. And our other two dogs acknowledged it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so it's pretty cool.
We're talking tonight with Rob Guttrow, author of many books about paranormal topics. We've been talking about that. He's also a medium and a paranormal investigator. We're going to talk about his newer book. Is the Case Files book the newest book, Rob?
It is.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about that in just a few minutes. Rob, you've got two websites listed here. Your name, robguttrow.com, but you also have petspirits.com. Do they go to the same place, or are these two different sites?
They go to the same place. It's just because people find it hard to spell my last name.
It is difficult to spell your last name, so that's a good move. So it's either robguttrow.com or petspirits.com, and there's a lot of great information there. So the Case Files book, set the stage for us here. What's this one about?
Sure. So for the past 10 years, I've been a medium on the Inspired Ghost Tracking Team in Maryland. And what we do is, like every other paranormal team, is we acknowledge requests from people who believe that they have hauntings in their house. So we do all kinds of questionnaires beforehand, and then we decide whether or not we're going to go in and investigate. And so we've been to historic places. We've been to a lot of private residences. All I can say is that you never know what you're going to get. And there's been some crazy, crazy things that we've encountered.
Tell me about the team. What type of personnel do you have on? I mean, obviously, you're a psychic medium. Do you use those skills in your investigations? And I think you do because you talked about sketching some of the images that you see. But talk about your role in the group and what the other folks who do the investigating with you do.
Sure. Well, I am one of the mediums. There are three of us. There's myself and there's a gentleman named Troy. And my husband Tom has some medium abilities that he developed when we went to England. So there are three of us. And the others are they're senior and technical investigators. So they use all kinds of equipment that you've discussed many times on your show, like K2 meters and digital thermometers, digital recorders, infrared cameras, all kinds of stuff. Typically, what happens is the tech team goes in first, and then another day, the mediums go in, and no information is shared between the two groups. After the mediums go in and we put everything together, then it all comes together in a report. And because I like to write, I'm the guy that puts the reports together, so I was able to compile this book.
Oh, wow. So it's not often that a paranormal group will go in with three mediums. How does that work? Do you and I don't know if there's a limited number amount of energy and you're all drawing from the same energy. I don't know how that works. But does it create any confusion, or is the whole greater than the sum of the parts here?
It actually works in a great way for us because we're kind of in tune with each other. Mm-hmm. We actually wind up confirming things that the other get.
Do you talk about it in real time as it's happening, or do you do your thing and then all meet afterward and say, this is what I found, this is what I found?
No, we talk about it in real time. There's one particular case called the double murder ghost investigation.
Ooh, I like the sounds of this.
Yeah, this was probably our most gruesome and unsettling case. In this particular instance, myself and Troy went into the home, and we knew nothing about it. Typically, the case manager, the manager Margaret Ehrlich, only gives us an address about 60 minutes before we're supposed to be somewhere.
Okay,
she does that because she wants to, you know, ensure that everybody just drives and nobody has time to even look up what the house looks
like. She doesn't want you to do research that's going to make you go in with preconceived notions or information that may skew your results.
Absolutely. And, you know, neither Troy nor I want to do that anyway. So in this particular instance, a family was traumatized by a family with kids. It was like a split-level rancher, and it's in the Baltimore area. And they were seeing shadow figures. They were having, like, blankets pulled off of them at night. They were getting cold chills. Very, very unsettling things happening in the house. As it turned out, Troy and I were drawn to one particular room in the house in the basement. And it was there that we wound up talking to two ghosts, two earthbound ghosts. One, I was talking to an older woman who was in her 60s, and he was talking to a younger woman who was in her 30s. And we both came to the conclusion that they were killed in the home. As it turned out later, police files would verify everything that we got.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really crazy. But they were the older one was the woman that owned the house. The younger one was the daughter-in-law who happened to be visiting when the mother-in-law's tenant who lived downstairs went on a drug-infested rampage and brutally murdered the two of them in the home. And they
you didn't know this going in?
No, we knew nothing.
Wow.
Yeah. We did get a picture. One of the investigators did get a picture when Troy and I were in this particular room that we sensed that we were talking to these two dead women of an orb. And as we blew the orb up, now we don't take a lot of stock in orbs. And for those listening that may not be familiar, but orbs are the most simple form a ghost or spirit can take. We usually find orbs have to have a design or color in them to be really considered an orb.
Yeah, design, color, or some type of self-illumination.
Yes. Yeah. So in this particular case, right where we got the feeling of the older woman, one of the guys took a picture, and we blew it up, and there was a face in the orb. Clearly a woman's face, and it's in the book.
Oh, neat.
And everybody can really see the eyes, nose, lips, chin, everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of creepy.
It is kind of creepy, and it's an amazing story. You also talk about a case called the Burned Ghost. What's this one about? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was another interesting case where the family had a couple of things going on. They suspected that there was a dog that had passed that was coming to visit, but they also had something darker going on. So this was actually a case where I took our Weimaraner, the one that just passed, and she mimicked the exact route the dog that had passed would take usually when the dog came in the house, going up to a certain room into the house and sitting. And so we, as soon as I let her go and she did that, I knew exactly what she was doing. She was following the dog in spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So we were able to figure that out. But what's weird about this particular case is that the mother of the family was not home when we started doing investigating. And we didn't find any dark entities. We didn't find anything. Nothing negative. Well, the mother came home, and that all changed. There seemed to be an attachment. A ghost had attached themselves to her. This is another case where Troy and I were there, and we started feeding off of each other. We started getting the same kind of sensations. He started getting hot and flush, and the ghost that was attached to this woman showed me that she had gold earrings burned into her ears. She was burned. Mm. She showed me she was in the back of a car and it exploded in flames. And as soon as I described all this to the mother, the woman, she said she was a nurse. She is a nurse, and she's a nurse in a burn unit. And she said she had a feeling she knew exactly who this was, so she called the hospital, and she actually got the woman's name.
Mm-hmm.
So we figured out who it was, and then we got a newspaper article later afterward. But we had to cross this woman over, this ghost over. She had attached herself to this nurse because after she died in the hospital, she did not want to go to her family. She didn't have a good relationship with her family. She said the nurse was the only person in her life that gave her more love and care than anybody she's ever encountered. So she came home with the nurse.
Came home with the nurse, but yet, you know, as you went into this particular case, you were looking for something negative.
Yes. Yeah.
So the attachment was from a loving perspective or a loving motivation, yet the symptoms of it seem to be somewhat negative.
Absolutely. Like I said, we never know what's going to happen. You know, it's easy to assume when you go on these paranormal investigations that there's going to be a negative entity there. Because I have found that people tend to stay behind because they're afraid to cross over, because they remember some horrible things that they did or bad things they did in life. So they're afraid to see what's on the other side. But in this particular case, this ghost stayed with this nurse out of love.
Talk for a second about attachments. How does that work? I mean, we've heard of negative entities attaching, mm-hmm. and I think that's probably a circumstance that people maybe not completely understand, but are more familiar with anyway. But what about something that's not a negative entity, as in the case you just described? How does that attachment work? Is it the ghost attaching to your soul, or is it a physical thing? How does it work? Do we have any idea?
I really don't have any idea. I just think the ghosts, of course, can read energy. Mm-hmm. So they know when people are mediums. So that's when they start speaking up. But they also know when people have good hearts, and maybe they can help them. And typically, I found that when you run into an earthbound ghost, they've been there quite a while, often, and they realize they're stuck in kind of an earthly prison of their choosing, and they realize it's not the place they need to be. So they're always looking for somebody to help them out. And in this particular case, this woman, I think her name was Lashika, realized that this nurse, since she was the only one that could help her out in life, could likely help her out in death. But there are other instances where negative entities will occasionally attach. We've only encountered, I think, maybe two other attachments. And one was actually a weird case where the ghost, earthbound ghost, of a man in Central America attached himself to a piece of jewelry that he had made.
Oh, wow.
And that case is in this book too. And he came back with that jewelry into this house, and he caused havoc. He caused havoc. And what's interesting about that case is both myself and Troy, we were coming to the house. We knew nothing about the house at all. I kept getting the sense that there was a piece of jewelry in a jewelry box. We had to go look for a jewelry box. And Troy was driving in his car, and he also got the sense that there was a piece of jewelry that was the cause of a problem. And when we got there and we parked and got out of our cars, we both shared what we had, and we were amazed to find out that we both honed in on the exact same thing.
Oh, wow.
As it turned out, yeah, it was a piece of jewelry from Central America.
So when you recognize one of these circumstances, an attachment, whether it's to an item or to a person, or if mm-hmm. if it's even a non-attachment case, but you recognize that you need to help a ghost or a spirit make that transition, how do you do that?
Well, typically we have to do a little bit of convincing, because everybody maintains their personality in life. If they're stubborn in life, they're going to be stubborn in death. If they're easygoing, they're going to be easygoing in death. But we have to come to the ghost from a perspective of being a caregiver or a helper. We want to help you achieve comfort. I've always found that if you try to be combative, you're not going to convince anybody of anything. You always have to come to somebody human from the helping perspective. Even if, like, for instance, Tom's folks are getting on in years, and they need to go into assisted living. When you tell them that they can get all of these comforts in assisted living that they don't have, that they're struggling without, it makes it more appealing. So instead of saying, oh, you need to go here.
Right.
So that's what we do with ghosts. And often what we do is we all have to join together in our emotional energies, open a portal to the other side, and then we often call on their loved ones in spirit to convince them to go across.
Is the act of helping a ghost cross over, is that an act of assistance for the living? In other words, you know, it's easy to understand why this attachment case, you would want that spirit to cross over, because then it would no longer be affecting the person who was still living. Are these attempts to help them cross over more of an assistance to the spirit themselves? And if that's the case, which I'm assuming you're going to say it's probably both, but if that's the case, what are we helping them do? Is it painful for them to be here? Is there something disadvantageous about them being stuck here in some way?
Sure. And yes, I will say that it is beneficial to both the living and the dead who have been stuck here. What I've found over time is that ghosts realize that they have been stuck and they're isolated and they can't communicate with their loved ones in spirit.
Are we talking about their living loved ones or their deceased loved ones?
Their deceased loved ones.
Okay.
Yeah. They can't even talk to their living loved ones either. If they were a spirit, they would have that ability. Often on paranormal investigations that I've been on, we will get sound bites that say "help" or "help me." And when you think about what they want help with, it's help getting out of where they decided to stay, so they can find peace.
And how do they get stuck? Is it something they've done, or do they after passing not recognize they've passed and maybe miss some an opportunity they need to take advantage? I don't know that we know the answers to this, but what do we have any idea what makes them become stuck?
Well, not exactly, but I do have some feelings about it, and I've asked that same question to ghosts, and they would say that they thought they could help their loved ones cope with their loss by staying behind. They had things that they didn't finish doing, and they thought they could do them from being a ghost. And here's the one kicker that really surprised me. Some of the people were very devoted to their religion, and they told me that they had kind of a life review right after they died. And they were so scared to cross over because they thought they were going to a bad place.
So
that was fascinating to me because in my experience, there is no bad place. You know, it's all energy and light and positivity on the other side. I really think that it's just my opinion. And even though I'm kind of an ex-Catholic now, I think that hell was kind of made up to scare people to go to be good. But I think that my idea of hell is being trapped as an earthbound ghost for eternity.
So then I'm trying to figure out how to ask this question and have it make sound like it makes sense. So regardless of what you do as a living human, after death, we all go to the same place?
Yes. We all cross over.
And to use the proverbial Hitler, so Hitler's ghost went to the same place as Mother Teresa's ghost?
Well, I don't think that he crossed over. When he got that awakening, I think he stuck here somewhere.
Okay. So do you think then, in order to make that transition, you have to be of certain moral character or not?
No, I think that you have to believe that you were good enough to go. I think it's a personal choice. Mm-hmm. There are a lot more spirits on the other side than there are earthbound ghosts.
Right.
That's for sure.
Now, if someone, as you said, you found cases where someone thought they could accomplish something that they hadn't finished before they passed by staying here as a ghost, then you talk about having to help them transition. What happens Is there a certain time frame they have to make the transition? If they don't do it by then they lose their way. They lose the ability to know how to do that. Or is there a portal portal is a bad word, but you know what I'm talking about. Something that opens and closes that they can't make it back through without help?
It seems to be the case, but we don't know the timeline, how long it takes. It seems to me that it would linger a couple of days. One of the first ghosts that I encountered when my abilities kind of woke up, if you will, was the victim of a car accident. I was driving by and I saw an Hispanic man standing in the middle of a road, and I knew that he had died in a car accident that morning. And when I called my husband later, I said, "Was there a car accident at 4:30 in the morning when you drove by this location?" He goes, "Yeah, how do you know? It was a white pickup truck." Because the victim of the accident is still standing there. And within a day, he was gone. So that told me that they have the ability at least a day or two.
Right.
To linger. But I've also found that people stay for their own wakes and funerals. So to me, those services take the course of a week. I mean, my dad did.
Yeah.
I saw my dad crossing to the light at his gravesite services, which were like three, four days after he passed. So I don't know the answer to the time question. But for some reason, they lose the ability, or they just don't know how to cross over. So I always send them to hospitals or funeral homes or other places where the light is opening.
You mentioned, I can't remember which story it was, but you talked about shadow figures. Do you have an idea of what shadow figures are? Are they just an incomplete manifestation of what we've been talking about as ghosts, or is it something different from your experience?
Yeah, that's what I look at them as. Again, it all goes back to energy. So I think of a shadow figure as an entity that doesn't have enough energy to become visible totally. It's kind of like a light bulb that is, you give it a little bit of energy and it's dim, you can see the outline of it. But if you turn all the, all the power on, you can see it in fully visible. So that's the way I look at ghosts and spirits, is that they're all about energy. Depends on how much energy they can draw from the physical energies like heat, light, water, and electricity, or emotional energies. Ghosts draw negative emotional, like fear, anxiety, depression, anger. Spirits draw love, faith, and hope.
Have you ever been called upon by law enforcement to solve a crime or something using your abilities?
No, gosh, no. I am... I consider myself always a medium in development, or a medium rare, if you will. There are a lot of learned mediums who devote their entire lives to mediumship and helping others. I kind of do it in my spare time because I'm a weather guy.
Are you still a practicing meteorologist?
I am.
Oh, nice. Do you do that for a television station or something?
No, I used to work at the Weather Channel, but I can't tell you where I work now. But but I will tell you that it is a La Nina year, which means that up in New York, there will be less precipitation this winter than normal.
That didn't prove true yesterday, I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
we got 22, 24 inches yesterday here. Not that that's completely unusual, but what a way to usher in Christmas week.
Exactly. It will be slightly warmer than normal, though, this winter.
That's actually a great point. Is there a correlation between weather and spirit activity? Some people think that electrical storms fuel that activity. Some people think rain and running water will fuel that activity. Have you noticed any of that?
As a matter of fact, I have. Within atmosphere, the atmosphere is actually a ball of energy. And again, because ghosts and spirits are energy, they draw on any kind of energy they can. And physical energies like rain, like rainfall, like lightning, in like movement of the air, all of those things are energy that, that spirits and ghosts can absorb. So there is really something to those old movies where they showed lightning storms and ghostly activity.
That's what I was just going to say. So all these years we've been just saying that's Hollywood, but in fact, there's some real science behind all of that.
Yeah, there is. And did you know that a bolt of lightning is hotter than the surface of the sun?
Really?
Yeah, as you go out further from the surface of the sun, it gets hotter and hotter. But a bolt of lightning is hotter than the surface of the sun.
So that's a lot of energy for sure. Yeah. Okay. So the book is available now. Is that right, Rob?
Yes. Yeah, they're all on Amazon.com in paperback and ebook.
Uh huh. And you're working on the new book. I think what is it? Pets and Spirits 3. Or Pets in the Afterlife 3.
Yeah. This one is actually about dogs, only dogs, because there's so many signs by dogs. And actually, there's a special chapter in here from a licensed psychologist about how to cope with grief, because a lot of people ask me for that.
Grief as a person who loses someone, or are you talking about pet grief?
Yeah.
Or maybe both.
Yeah, great. Both, actually.
Great. Good. Well, it's great work that you're doing, Rob, and I appreciate you coming on and sharing it with us. I love having you on the program. Did you say when Pets in the Afterlife 3 was going to be available? Not that we want to rush things.
It's going to be sometime in January. I just got the cover back this week, and I'm almost done with the final edit. So,
I should know the answer to this question, but do you do consultations or anything privately with people?
I've been actually doing them by email for about 10 years, which is how I get all these stories. I will be putting something on my website come January 1st where they can just send, make an appointment or send me an email. Usually I ask for a picture of their pet or and then the pet's name and any questions. And I just give them a really short reading.
And the websites are robgutrow.com, or if you're worried about spelling Rob's name, it's petspirits.com. Anything else you'd like people to know about or follow?
I just want to let them know that, especially during this pandemic and this very difficult time about being alone, if you are alone, just know that you are not alone, because not only are your human loved ones in spirit with you, but so are your pets.
Very comforting. Thanks so much for being here, Rob. Appreciate it.
Thanks, JV. Happy holidays.
Beyond Reality Paranormal is hosted by J.V. Johnson and produced by Orion Palmer and Slick Eddie Edwards. Like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please consider supporting the program either through your podcast platform, click on the link in the description, or on Patreon at Joha Productions. If you'd like to be a guest on Beyond Reality Paranormal or you have a recommendation for a guest, contact our producer, Slick Eddie Edwards. Eddie is spelled with a Y at slickeddieedwards@gmail.com.